Welcome to After Dark with Rob and Andrew on America Out Loud, available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or Pandora, or head on over to the website AmericaOutLoud.com and check out the articles and podcasts, and please share those on social media. You know, Rob and I have been here at America Out Loud for almost a full year now, so we've got a great archive of shows over at AmericaOutLoud.com. You guys want to be sure to head on over there and check it out. Tons of great shows and articles over at AmericaOutLoud.com. We're lucky to be joined once again tonight by New York Post journalist Heather Robinson. She's going to be joining us to discuss a lot about what is going on in the world today. But I'm going to start off with talking about Joe Biden and his incompetent administration. Now seems like their new strategy is to blame Russia for everything that is going wrong, regardless if things were already bad before this whole Russia and Ukraine conflict started. It seems like it's so convenient for Joe Biden and Jen Psaki, whenever asked about something that's going wrong now, just to say, well, ask Vladimir Putin about that, when things like raising gas prices were happening before this conflict even started. Joe Biden's always looking to pass the buck. The next time Joe Biden takes responsibility for something would be the first time he takes responsibility for something. The guy is just a complete liar and a complete incompetent president from what we have seen so far. But enough of me. Rob, how are you doing tonight?
Andrew, I'm doing great. I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. And as you said, please share. We have been on this platform, America Out Loud, for almost a year now. It's coming up in April. I think it's April 11th or 12th. I want to thank all of you who journeyed with us along this journey. It has been an interesting journey, as we know that a lot of things have transpired. But going back to your opening, it seems now the Biden administration, we talked about last night, the reset, the great reset of the left, and they're using Russia and Ukraine as that reset and as an out for them. When I say out for them to escape the incompetence that's being seen on the world stage. And we can't be deceived by it. We have to be aware as to what's happening, and we have to call it out the way it is. I was watching one of the news stations the other day, and I saw one of the journalists, who I think is a rather, you know, she's an okay journalist, but clearly she's biased, Maura Lysen, and she's on NPR. And she was speaking with the moderator, and they were talking about the high gas prices, oil, and she flat out lied and said that, and inflation, she said that Biden isn't responsible for it, and that this was happening before he came into office. In fact, she said it was happening under Trump, and that Biden produced more oil, pumped more oil than Trump had done during his time in office. I'm like, wait a minute. Now, this talk about a great reset, that is a reset right there. And she kept going on and on, spewing all these lies, and the moderator didn't bother to stop her. But what I found interesting is that I think back to the Trump years, and whenever anyone from his administration would come out and speak truth to power as to what he was going to do or was doing, and citing the numbers, they would always have these fact checkers who were probably high school graduates, and there's nothing wrong with that, or college graduates that were doing the fact checking. And then they would use as their guide Google or Yahoo. They would go there. And if Google and Yahoo didn't give them what they want, oh, what he was saying was wrong. What Trump's people were saying was wrong. And we all know how biased Google is. These individuals have a vested emotional interest in this. And as we have said before, they can't, they won't give Trump any credit for anything. They can't do it. They can't say that Biden is wrong. He's going down the wrong path. So they have to say inflation is good. High gas prices is good. Meanwhile, with the high gas prices, they want to keep them up that high so that they can convince you, the public, that don't buy gas cars, get electric cars. Because look at how high gas is. But this is because of Biden and his incompetence. We have to speak truth to power. We can't be emotional about these things. And a lot of the people on the left are emotional because what they went through under Trump, they could not understand how this man, not a politician, was able to succeed, despite the fact that they were after him. They impeached him twice. And if you look at why they impeached him, you would like shake your head and like, are you serious? You impeached him over a phone call? You impeached him because people didn't want to accept the election? When you guys didn't accept the election for 3 whole years, you lied about Russia collusion. they have an emotional investment. They are afraid that if they don't do this, that he could possibly run again. And for all we know, he probably is not even thinking about it. But he has us guessing, will he, won't he? And because of that, they have to use everything in their arsenal to lie, cheat, and destroy, to bring down this country with high inflation, gas prices. They have been telling us that the world was going to be destroyed for almost 30-something years, and yet and still we are still here. High gas prices, electric cars. I'm all for clean energy. If we think that electric cars will get us there, let's do it. But it won't get us there. We don't have enough electric cars to go around. We don't have enough electricity stations for people to go and use. And if we were today, right now, tomorrow, say, okay, no more gas cars, we're going to stop it. Do you actually think that there would be enough electric cars to go around to everyone to replace their gas cars? They would probably get mad at Elon Musk and say, oh, he's cornering the market. And of course he would be, because he's the only producer right now. There are other producers, but he's like at the forefront. So of course his bottom line is going to increase. But do we have enough electricity? And who's making the cars? Well, let's go to China. The same way we're going to Iran and begging Iran for more oil production. The same way we're going to Saudi Arabia. The same way we're going to Venezuela. These people have a vested emotional interest, and they can't see beyond their stupidity and their hate for the country to put it all behind them and say, Joe is on the wrong track. We cannot continue this way. We don't like Trump, but by God, his policies worked. Everyone is citing Bill Barr now. Well, look at what he said in his book. He said that Trump doesn't have the temperament. Define temperament. A person who's just going to sit there and let other people run over them, as opposed to speaking up. A person who's going to swing back whenever someone says something. I don't care if he swings back as long as his policies are helping the country. As long as his policies are making my 401k go up, as long as his policies is a deterrent to people like Russia and China, but we want to sit back and cry because he hurt my feelings. He doesn't have the temperament. I want someone who's going to come out in a blue suit and quote a speech and make me feel good, although hell is outside. Is that what we want? We become a nation of softies, brushing our egos, our little emotions? We have to be better than that. Again, hate Trump all you want to. Say that he was bombastic. Say that he was unreal. I don't care. But you look at his policies compared to Joe Biden, who can barely get two sentences together. When he's out on the road, he's fumbling, he's mumbling. And the only thing the media will say is that he has a stutter problem. He stutters. Give me a break. The man is losing it. Kamala doesn't have a speech impediment problem, and she still can't get it together. Kamala goes out on the world stage and she doesn't know what to say. She's cackling nonstop. And you want to tell me that this administration has the best interest of the country at heart? Bollocks, it's wrong. It is time to wake up. I'm fired up tonight. I'm tired of this nonsense. It should not be this way. We got to stop behaving like kids and be adults. Heather, how are you tonight?
Happy to be on, Rob. Good to hear you, and I'm fine.
I mean, I hate being so, like, I'm just passionate about this. Yes. And I know that a lot of people don't like Trump, and I get it. And this is not an endorsement of Trump, but it is an endorsement of his policies. It is an endorsement that he is the kind of person that we need at this point in time. We can't be led by emotions. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and I think you're right. This is a very, emotional time. It has been the past couple of years. And I think we've seen the ascendancy of a lot of emotional, I guess it's an oxymoron to say emotional thinking, but it's like there is a lot of hysteria, mob mindset in the air. People, I think we're being manipulated in a lot of ways. I do. And I don't mean to sound like a conspiracy theorist. I'm not saying it's necessarily one cabal of people doing it, but I do think that there are, I just said to a friend tonight, I wish I trusted our foreign policy elites in this country more, for instance. I think that, 20, 25 years ago, I with some reservations and doubts, I did support the Iraq policy and the Afghanistan policy. I just always believed that our leaders knew a lot more than I did and wanted the best for our country. And even though certain things didn't make sense to me, I thought that, well, you know, it's for the best. And I think we learned that, look, I think both of those situations weren't totally black and white. And there was some good accomplished by getting rid of Saddam Hussein, for instance. But gosh, you know, how much loss of American blood and treasure, how many young men robbed of their limbs and lives. And now what do we have? You know, I mean, I think so much of our foreign policy, you know, in this current situation with regard to Russia and Ukraine, as you know, I humbly have to say that I think it's been very bungled from our end and continues to be, even though Putin is a brutal dictator, and I'm not excusing him, but I think that Americans are being manipulated very much so by our elites, by a media that sees things in a shallow way. People don't really want to grapple with cognitive dissonance. They don't want to study the issues. You know, the attention spans are short, and media sells simple emotional stories, and people get very quickly emotional. And I think even well-intentioned good people, they see this situation, for instance, you know, a smaller country being invaded by a big country. War is brutal. And those of us fortunate enough to have never experienced it directly can't even imagine, you know, but we see these images, and it's not that it isn't real or isn't happening. It's not that we shouldn't be sad and angry, but the truth is that war has, you know, I've learned a little bit in the past few weeks and months, and that war, it's not just starting now. There's been a war in the Donbass region of Russia. Russia, call it, you know, Ukraine. Right now, it's part of Russia again. These, you know, there have been people who wanted to be with Putin and wanted to be part of Russia, who those people say they've been brutalized by the Ukrainians there for the past decade. Do Americans have any basic information about that? Nope. Is there any content in the media about that? Not that that excuses what Putin's doing, but this is a continuation of a war. And, you know, there are plenty of people who feel that, you know, they believe that Putin is acting in what he believes to be the best interests of his country, because he feels very threatened by NATO and the West. And he thinks that Ukraine's being used, that the Ukrainian people are being used. You know, apparently we helped foment a coup there in 2015. I'm not saying we shouldn't, you know, sympathize and necessarily that we shouldn't help the Ukrainians, but I think we should, if we're going to do it, we should really have a bigger picture and understand the bigger picture and think about the potential consequences of pouring weapons into this. But people are not informed very, you know, beyond the basics that happened yesterday. And it's very emotional. You're right. It's much more emotional than rational, in my opinion.
And that's what scares me, is that we are behaving emotional in our decision-making process. You look at the media. I mean, the media is there for a purpose, meaning they're embedded in Ukraine, and they're reporting the news to us as to what's happening. But it seems as if they're moving toward a drumbeat to get our troops involved so that we could save the lives of these Ukrainians. And hear me clearly, what is happening is devastating, and my heart goes out to these Ukrainians. And unlike Joy Reid of PMSNBC, I'm not looking at this as a black, white thing or a Christian, Jewish, Muslim thing, because that's what she has turned it into.
No, but I will say, not that I totally agree with the way she put it, there's a grain of truth to what she's saying, Rob. I mean, people don't realize how brutal, how horrible so many of the wars that have gone on in Africa are, that continue to go on there, that get not one tiny fraction of the coverage that this gets. There is a distortion. There is, you know, it's a hard thing to say, because I'm not trying to minimize the suffering in Ukraine for a second. But one thing she's not wrong about is there's tremendous suffering, especially among people of color around the world, you know, look, in Sudan, millions of people, Christians, Sudanese Christians, were slaughtered. There were several wars there. The West didn't bat an eye. You know, there's a war going on now, apparently, in Ethiopia. There's abuse of Christian Arabs that is continuous, goes on for decades now, horrible crimes against them. And I realize that the Ukraine situation is a powder keg potentially for a few different reasons. And that's part of why it's getting more coverage. But I think there's a grain of truth in what Joy Reid's saying. You know,
and I don't think there's any truth in what she's saying at all. I think she's turning this into a race issue. And it isn't. But if it is, if there is any truth to it, I would say, then who do we look at? Who's reporting the information? The liberal media. Because Fox News talks about the atrocities that are taking in Sudan and the slavery that's taking place there all the time. When they first came out saying that, oh my God, look at all the racism that's happening and that the United States, the slavery and what we did with slavery 200 something years ago. And Fox News came out and said, yeah, but there's slavery going on right now. Why aren't you guys saying anything about it? There's slavery going on in Saudi Arabia. There's slavery going on in China. Why aren't you saying anything about it?
Nothing,
quiet. So while she's trying to make her point, she's trying to cases so that she can get Black people to say, oh, there they go again. They're defending white people. I would question her and say, why haven't you been reporting about the atrocities that are taking place in Africa? Have the mic.
Christian organizations at least try to do something for enslaved Black people.
And I would say the same thing for when Black women turn up missing. Why isn't she out there on her soapbox talking about it? She's not out there talking about it because she knows that no one is going to pay attention. So she's guilty. She is just as guilty as the ones that she is trying to point the finger at and say, oh, well, they don't care about it. Okay, you have a platform, Joy Reid, and all the other Blacks that are on it, PMS, NBC, and CNN, but you don't talk about it. You have a platform to denounce the crime that's taking place in the Black community, the crime that's allowing these Black men to go out and commit crimes against Asians and women. Why won't she speak out against it? Why hasn't she spoken out against Jussie Smollett, who could have caused a race riot? Why hasn't she? She has the platform. But going back to the crime that's being committed right now, because we're going to talk about crime in one of our other shows this week. But the crime that's being committed, and I mentioned this on one of our shows, that as a Black man, I feel threatened. I feel hopeless because crime has no color. And when you have these people, that's all they see, that's on the news, who did it? A Black man, Black man, Black man. So that when I walk out in the street, minding my own business, someone can say, oh, it looks like him. And then I get hauled off. Why isn't she talking about that? Why isn't she saying that these policies that you guys are creating by allowing these Black individuals, these Black men to go free, will affect the Black men that are obeying the law? We have to look at it statistically. When you look at it, there's a large proportionately, Black men are committing crimes. We make up 13% of the population. But when you have 13% of the population that you make up, and of that percent, a large chunk of it is being crime is being committed by that group, shame on you. Why isn't she saying anything about it? Because that is not what they want to hear. But when they talk about Black and white, those issues, oh, people will stop what they're doing and they will tune in. Look at how they did it for the election of 2020. All they had to do was talk about race. You got Black people's attention. Meanwhile, Joe Biden has done absolutely nothing for Black people but put them in jail. She won't talk about that. She won't talk about those policies. And when she talks about them, they'll just brush right over and keep going and still say, vote Democrat. You look at all the Democrats that are in office. What have they done for Black people since the Civil Rights Movement? But still tell Black people that you will overcome. Just wait, vote for us again. You're going to get back in office. So she's part of the problem and not the solution. So when she comes out and she makes a statement like that, I look at her and go, whatever. Because you're part of the problem and not the solution. Because you can identify all the other issues that are taking place around the world, but she does not. She will only speak up when it involves Black and white because she knows that that is a sore thumb and people will stop and listen. So albeit she might be speaking her truth to power, but when she's not acting upon it in the way that she should, it's meaningless.
I understand what you're saying. I think. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, we just gotta, we have to speak the truth, plain and simple.
God bless
you. She's being guided by emotions. And it sickens me that here we are in 2021, 2022, and we're still addressing the same old issues time after time after time. And I gotta say that Republicans aren't helping much, because we sit back and we hold our hands when stuff like that is said, as opposed to calling her out every chance they get and say, okay, Joy, why aren't you speaking about it? You're saying that people are only interested because it's Ukraine and they're white and they're Christians. Okay, why don't you talk about the other side of it? Why don't you talk about the Christians that are being persecuted in Africa? And by whom? By other Black people, other Africans. Why don't you talk about it?
In a lot of cases.
Why don't you talk about the, what was the guy's name, Mugabe, who became a billionaire off the back of his own people? They won't talk about it, because that's not the narrative. They want to create a narrative that white men came over to Africa and they stole all the Black people, and then they put them here in the United States and they made them work and it was horrible. You have slavery all over the globe.
And there's a hierarchy with them, Rob. You know, I noted this not after the Pulse nightclub massacre, which was, I guess that was about, I think it was, about 8 years ago or so. And it was a huge massacre of mostly gay people at a nightclub, 50 people, I believe, killed, and, you know, dozens and dozens injured, some severely. And, you know, you never hear about that anymore. You don't hear much memorializing of the victims or much discussion. Right. I think it was the biggest hate crime against gays in the history. I mean, in terms of the numbers of people killed, I would venture that I think it was the biggest anti-gay. I mean, I know that there have been some big...
Well, you have Stonewall.
Stonewall, right. But I mean, I think since then, anyway, it would have been the biggest. And, you know, I realized one day probably why. It's because the perpetrator happened to be an Arab Muslim. Hierarchy of political correctness. I think the Arab Muslim terrorists, which is not to say that all Arab Muslims or most are terrorists, but the, you know, those who are, they rank the highest in my observation. In
terms no, of, no.
You know, they can, not, nothing that they do or have ever done can be in any way, not forget about criticized, it can barely be acknowledged, you know, that they perpetrated anything, you know, so if they kill someone Black or gay, that's like the Trump card. And then I don't know where the different minorities rank below that, but, you know, it's sort of like if somebody, it's not humanitarianism and equal concern for any human being who's victimized, which is what it should be. But it's, you know, it's, are you, you know, a member of this group or that group that can't be in any way, you know, suspect, or, you know, even if you're not trying to, you know, paint with too broad a brush, you're just trying to understand what happened. You know what I'm trying to say? You know, they have this sort of hierarchy where, you know, if you were, you know, like a quadruple minority person, you know, if you were a transgender, you know, gay, Arab, Muslim, Black, you know, lesbian, I guess you could like be the next Adolf Hitler and nobody would be allowed to say anything or something. But anybody else who, you know, if you're any minority and you happen to be victimized by a white person, then, you know, of course it'll be, you know, very much discussed and prosecuted and, you know, as well it should be. But it's, do you know what I mean? It's like,
no, Heather, you're spot on. And I'm glad we're having this conversation, because what you're saying is so truthful.
I mean, if there's anything else, I should probably be careful what I say, because it's, I don't want to, I know it won't be misinterpreted by you guys, but
you have to speak truth to power. And that's the problem. We have to have these conversations. And when we don't have the conversations, we have what's happening right now, with people just assuming or thinking, oh no, it's the white man. It's the white man. It's always a white man. Whenever something, and that's not to say that all white men are good.
White guy the other day beating the crap out of Asian women all over New York City.
Yes.
I don't know how long it took them to even find his crazy ass. He ran around and women in Union Square and the West Village and the Upper West Side and the Upper East. I mean, I was kind of thinking to myself, my gosh, come on, NYPD. I mean, how many poor women does this man have to beat?
Right. Well, but did you notice, Heather, did you notice when they, the description They said that he looked like a fair-skinned man with white hair. Now, when I saw him, I said, this is a white man. But they were careful because they thought, just in case he happens to be a black man, we want to be extra careful with it. But it shouldn't be that way.
Looks like an albino.
Right, an albino. It doesn't matter. If the person commits a crime, we need to arrest them, and we need to say, this is what the person looks like, this is who he is, and give them the same amount of attention.
But you're it's right. Not like but I mean, it's like they're afraid to use a physical description. They're so
ridiculous. That's because
maybe that was part of the problem why they couldn't catch them. I mean, it went on and on for hours. I kept seeing these reports. Oh, you got another, another. It's like you'd have to be the Keystone Cops not to get this guy. You know, I don't mean to be hard. I like the NYPD and everything, but
it's ridiculous. It's like we're afraid. We're so afraid that we might offend someone. You're going back to the case, like you said, in Florida with the that killed those gay individuals. And we've got to stop trying to be so politically correct because it's going to harm us. It will we will kill ourselves.
Yeah.
If we don't get beyond it.
Yeah, well said. Great discussion, guys. You guys are tuned into After Dark with Rob and Andrew, available on America Out Loud via iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or download the America Out Loud app to keep track of all the great shows. We'll be back with more After Dark with Rob and Andrew with guest Heather Robinson.
In today's world, there's no escaping the headlines filled with warnings about emerging viruses and dangerous superbugs. Genesis is the only technology that safely and effectively obliterates harmful pathogens both in the air and on surfaces. Genesis plus HOCL neutralize these threats to your environment in just seconds. Find out more about this amazing technology at genesisfogger.com/outloud for a 15% discount. With Genesis, you'll be prepared for what's next.
As Americans, we seek to form a more perfect union. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And God willing, we shall not perish from the earth. AmericaOutloud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health four times a day. That's 112 times per month. But by simply keeping our immune system strong, we can stay healthy and put our worries at ease. One little known way to do this is by taking AC11, a patented supplement from a plant in the Amazon rainforest. Studied for over 20 years and backed by over 40 scientific peer-reviewed studies, taking AC11 has been proven to extend the life of immune cells called leukocytes, allowing you to boost immunity naturally. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of AC11. That's healthycell.com, HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Folks, we are back with After Dark with Rob and Andrew. And if you missed the first 30 minutes of the show, when the podcast drops, you definitely want to go and listen to it. Because Heather and I, we were on fire. And we were bringing up conversations that people don't want to have because they're uncomfortable. I mentioned Joy Reid, what Joy Reid was talking about, what she had said, that the news was focusing in on Ukraine because they were white. And then Heather came back and said, well, when you look at it, I mean, you look at all the atrocities that are taking place in Africa. And then I came back and said, well, you know, that's right. But also, Joy has a platform and she can talk about it. See, these are the things that people aren't talking about because they're afraid. They're afraid they might offend someone. But we need to have these conversations. So Heather, I'm glad that you brought that up. Because we need to talk about this. We've got to stop trying to be so freaking politically correct and woke that we can't speak truth to power and call out the anomalies of things that are happening here. Our country we're going to tear our country up, pitting people against each other.
Terrible. And, you know, where is the respect of all people, you know, for one another? And you know, men toward women, women toward men, you know, we're being fed these narratives that it's, you know, masculinity is toxic and every man is a harasser and every woman is a victim. And, you know, there are serious issues with sexual assault and abuse in this country. And, you know, that's just an example of something that's a certain segment of the population, namely privileged white women. You know, now I'm sounding like a lib a little bit, but I think that we have kind of, to some degree, dominated this dialogue recently with all these tales of lurid alleged sexual harassment. And I don't know, to be honest with you, I mean, it's a little bit of a revelation to me. You know, this is really politically incorrect, but I just, you know, I always thought that, you know, I mean, who knew that like every woman in the world was being continuously sexually propositioned and harassed? And, you know, I'm not saying that's good. I get it. Women don't need that in the workplace. But I mean, now an unwanted compliment or something has become harassment. Meanwhile, we have an industry of massage parlors popping up all across the country. And, you know, my research has yielded information that a lot of the women in there are trafficked from Indonesia, from Asia, generally from China in some cases. They're being held against their will. It's very tough for the cops to build a case for a lot of different reasons, including cultural reasons. But my point is, you know, we also have an epidemic. We have a lot of young kids coming through the foster care system who are lured in commercial sexual exploitation. You know, we have very serious abuse, but, you know, it's like the political correct media narrative is all about the, you know, the white women in the workplace kind of thing. And I'm not dismissing that, but I'm just saying that media, it does tend to distort in a lot of ways. It makes a huge spotlight on those issues, which are important, but frankly, they're not as important as little girls being raped and you know, people being held against their will. Where is the massive groundswell of, you know, outrage over those things? You know, where is society mobilizing to address those ills? I just think, you know, in recent years, we're kind of getting this we're in this strange reality where certain people's pain and certain people's offense taking is, you know, given a hugely, you know, disproportionate hearing. And then there are like more serious, grave, hit horrendous abuses that get almost no mention or thought by anybody, including, yeah, I mean, I'm talking about here in our country where we have to start, but yes, in other parts of the world, there's still slavery being practiced and widespread practice in places like Sudan. And because the perpetrators happen to be Islamists, you know, and it's far away, you know, very few people here other than Christian organizations want to touch it. And there's humanitarian, you know, left. Where are they? It's really bad.
Well, it goes back to, as we opened up saying, it's all emotional. Mm-hmm. People are guided by emotions and they vote from an emotional standpoint. They view the world through emotions.
And through the self, very much.
Through the self. Right. And it's okay. We need everyone. We should all have emotions, but mm-hmm. When it comes to making critical decisions, we can't always let that be the guiding principle.
Right. What pisses us off, what inconveniences us, what we were told we were entitled to be aggrieved about in our life, you know, as
bingo,
opposed to
aggrieved about, what we were told we were supposed to be aggrieved about. And I think that guides a lot of people with their emotions. You're supposed to be aggrieved about this. You're supposed to be aggrieved about that. And it just doesn't help. I mean,
and you're entitled to be perpetual.
Entitled.
Yes. And the irony is that those are the people who are calling everybody else entitled. But like I'm supposed to as a woman. Yeah, sure. I've been hit on in the workplace. I've gotten some inappropriate comments. But I mean, in the grand scheme of my life, it wasn't something that, you know, is the biggest challenge in my life and something that I'm dwelling on and that needs to be, you know what I mean? It's like you deal with it and, you know, it's just one out of 100 different things, you know what I mean, that are relatively minor, that are like nuisances in life, but it's like, that's supposed to take primacy in my consciousness. Anyway, the point is, I think that it's actually very, you know, we're living in a time with a huge focus on the self. You know, people actually have a lot of security. You know, I think that, you know, most people aren't really into these elites. I mean, the people who are staffing the newspapers and the broadcast people and the, you know, top institutions of the country. I mean, they're very, very focused on themselves. And, you know, it's all kind of like navel gazing, but here are these glaring, gaping, horrible things happening in the world. And most of them don't get any attention, and a few of them do because they conform to the narrative somehow.
Everything that you're saying is spot on. And then it begs a question, how do we get away from the emotions? I don't think we ever will, because people are able to, well, let's just be honest. We're not going to be focused on it unless it's an emotional issue, unless it hits us. And then we will stop and listen. And the person that's feeding us information is probably lying, as I started off saying earlier with the journalist Mara Lacyon on NPR. I mean, you just think about it. She's on a conservative news outlet spewing disinformation. So if there are liberals listening in, and I'm sure that there are, because Fox has been dominating the ratings as far as their broadcasting, they're going to listen to that and go, oh, right, she's speaking the truth and she's on Fox. But she's not. She's speaking to soundbite. She's speaking to a certain segment. And it was so clear what she was doing and how she was doing it and why she was doing it, because she probably knows, I've got some emotional watchers. And if I say this, they'll be tuned in again. And they'll say that what I'm saying is right. When all you have to do is step back and just look and look at the timeline. And that's what I'm always amazed about, that people don't look at the timing as to when these things happen. Gas prices were already going up before Russia went into Ukraine. We were already in inflation before Russia went into Ukraine. All this was happening before. And the media was trying to spin it and say there is no inflation and that inflation was good. I remember Stephanie Ruhle. Stephanie Ruhle even said on PMS NBC that inflation is good. She came out and she said it. I'm thinking, are you serious? Inflation is not good. Mm. We've never said inflation was good. Jerome Powell, the Treasury guy, had to come out and say, okay, we need to stop saying this. This inflation is transitory, because it's not. We got to stop that. But at one point, everyone on the left, the media, commentators, pundits were saying, oh, it's transitory. It'll be gone before you know it. Don't worry about it. But the gas prices, I mean, $6 and it's okay. And that's so that they can ease in. Oh, look at an electric car. And you look at Stephen Colbert, who said, well, I'm not worried about it because I have an electric car. Well, Stephen, everyone doesn't have $50,000 sitting around that they can go buy an electric car. And if they did go buy an electric car, who's to say there would be a docking station for them to get the electricity? But no one is thinking about that. They're just thinking, oh, it sounds good. It makes me feel good. Clean energy, green energy, get rid of the gases. It's like, but we will still, who's going to power the electricity? You will still need a form of gas. And then where are we going to get it from? China. China, as we mentioned on the show before with you on it, Heather, has gone into Africa and bought a mining field whereby there's cobalt that is used for the electric cars. China has assigned minings in China. No one is thinking about that. And no one is reporting on it. We're just here, green energy is the best thing. Reduce our carbon footprint. But we can reduce our carbon footprint, but what about the other countries? You know, this just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But yet and still, guided by emotions, it makes us feel good. It sounds good. By golly, we should do it. Let's just do it. Let's kill our middle class. Let's put people out of work. And then, and here's the biggest kicker. When you hear Biden and his administration, especially Jen Psaki, coming out saying, oh, we have all of these contracts for these miners to go in and mine. They just got to use them. Yeah, but you guys said that you issued the certificates for them to go ahead and mine, but you have to approve it. And you want to prove it. Gaslighting, guided by emotions. And people won't think, but wait a minute. If they have the certificates to do it, why can't they do it? Well, they can't do it because Biden's administration won't give them permission to do it. But no one is thinking about that. They only hear, oh, they can do it. They don't want to do it. That's not the truth. And that's what Mara was saying the other day. And I'm like, she knows that's not true. She knows she's not speaking the truth, but yet and still she's putting it out there because she knows that people with emotions will say, we feel so sorry for the Ukrainians. So I'm okay paying $7 of gas. just to help them out. But how is that helping them? Give them ammunition. That's how it will help them, because
I don't think that'll help them, Robert. I think it's just prolonging the agony. I'm sorry, but I had a discussion with somebody else about this today, and I happen to believe, maybe I'm wrong. I'm not a foreign policy expert, okay? But I know that this friend of mine was saying, but what about democracy? And what about people who are willing to die for their convictions and their values? And how can they be crushed? And what about the 13 colonies and the Revolutionary War? And I just said, you know what? There are some similarities, and God bless some of those who are sincere in fighting for democracy. But first of all, King George didn't have a nuke. Second of all, you're talking about a group of people, the American colonists, who, generationally came here, sacrificed enormously to build something completely new in a new land. And yes, of course, there were also already people here. We know that. But in terms of what they were building, it was a break from that part of the world and a completely new undertaking, and the braving disease and pestilence and, enemies and hardship, and, undergirded by the ideals and the thinking, the logical thinking of the Enlightenment, and about what it means to have individual responsibility in a free society and be one's own commander, a society of people who really wanted and sacrificed for freedom. And I'm not saying that the Ukrainians don't contain people like that. I don't know. But I know that it was something that evolved over the course of hundreds of years, and it was a struggle to birth a new kind of a way of life that the people built, in a new place. And it wasn't completely impossible. The king was powerful, but he didn't have a nuke. I mean, this is a different situation. I certainly believe in democracy and freedom and ideals, but I really think that, we're applying a lot of American-centric lens to something, to a part of the world that's not our part of the world. This is old Europe in a lot of ways, with a lot of its old, grievances and angers and a conflict that's been going on, if not since ancient times, it's been going on. At least I was reading about, what Stalin did to the Ukrainians, and what the Ukrainians inflicted on the Jews, and, the back and forth in these different regions, and the Donbass, and, some of the people wanting to be with Putin and some of them don't. I just think that we're dealing with something that we really don't understand very well. And we're pouring in weaponry and firepower into something that, I hope to be wrong. Maybe somehow Putin and his nuclear weapons will be defeated, but I don't think so.
Here's my take on it.
Very emotional, very illogical,
Very emotional indeed. And as you said, you don't think that the weaponry would help them. I mean, Andrew and I spoke about this on one of our other shows last week, is that we're very cautious as far as arming the Ukrainians, because we don't know what they will turn around and do once they have the weaponry. But I would prefer doing that as opposed to sending our boys and girls. But that being said, why aren't the other European countries helping out? Now, I know that Poland said that we'll give them the jets or whatnot, but they're going to come from your Air Force base. It's like they're always trying to tie America in on it. And my greatest fear is that once we keep seeing those pictures of, like the other day, the hospital that was bombed, and the maternity ward, and you saw a mother being carried out on a stretcher. And it's, people see this and they start emotionally like, oh my God, this can't happen. And what are we doing? Well, we're doing what we've got to do. And hear me carefully. And it is to mind our own business, take care of what's at home. We need to focus on China right now, because if something similar happens in China, what would our response be? Are we going to stop buying goods from China? Are we going to tell Apple and the NBA and all these other companies to come home? I mean, we've got to think about it.
Right.
What does it do?
And, you know, I mean, here's another way to look at it. I mean, maybe those poor women and children, maybe if things had been allowed to come to resolution sooner, you know, Putin's initial strategy, I'm no military strategist, but I know that it was surrounding the cities, you know, and in recent days, after the world poured weapons in and Ukraine stepped it up, then Russia stepped it up and started this, what appears to be indiscriminate shelling of population centers, you know, the intention being to overwhelm the Ukrainians. So a lot of these people, these civilians who are dying, presumably, if the whole thing had been, you know, wrapped up sooner, they wouldn't be dying. I mean, you know, we're fueling this. We're, you know, we're...
But wait, Heather, something, I think you were on the show when we said this, as far as the people that are dying. If we really take an honest look at this and what we discussed in the show, yeah, you were on the show and we brought this up about mm-hmm. NATO. And I think that Zelensky, what he's doing, okay, is rather admirable, but just imagine had he just come out and said, we're not going to join NATO. All the lies potentially, and we don't know for certain, that would have been saved had he just said, no, you guys have been stringing us on for 30 years. It's not worth it. We're not going to go there. The lies that would have been saved.
The other day, Rob, he said, I'm kind of cooling off on this whole NATO thing.
Yeah. Once, how many people have been killed, have died?
But you know, now he's going to come to it? How do we respond instead of saying, yes, Zelensky, good on you. You're talking sense. Let's get together with Putin. Let's work out a deal. You know, our great diplomat, what do? We send more weapons and keep, you know, turning this into a circus of, you know, suffering and talking about how great we are because we're standing up for freedom. You know, their leader himself is saying, you know, maybe this whole NATO thing was not such a great idea. I mean, to me, I don't know. I feel like, am I crazy? I mean, what is it? I mean, we're sort of drunk on this idea of you know, some kind of Shangri-La over there. But the reality is, you know, I mean, I guess Ukraine's been moving towards something of a more democratic model. But, you know, the country was full of corruption and it's got a lot of problems. You know, Russia is not a free, wonderful republic, but it's not, people aren't being gassed by the millions and put into concentration camps. I mean, it isn't North Korea. It isn't the end of the world to live in Russia. And not to mention, who knows, maybe they could have or could still work out some kind of a deal where Ukraine's a neutral country anyway. I mean, Ukraine wasn't in you know, NATO anyway. So it's not even like anything would be lost from what is at present to say, okay, you know, let's take a pass on this NATO thing and why don't we just be a neutral country like Switzerland? And then I read something about how that's part of what Putin's asking for. So, I mean, don't quote me on that because I'm not 100% sure, but I mean, everybody's so totally convinced that Putin is an absolute madman, Hitler, sadist, power-crazed lunatic. I can't say for certainty that he is not those things, but you know, I don't think what he's done so far, awful as it is the, you know, equivalent or as bad as Hitler. I mean, I think that we're getting a little potentially carried away. We don't know that he's determined to take over the whole world and massacre millions of people. I mean, you know what I mean? What he's done is bad enough, but it isn't that. And I think, you know, that there's something to be said for calming the hell down and just looking at what is, as opposed to what we imagine he will do next and what he would have done if we hadn't done this. You know, there's what is. There's, you know, he said for the past 10 years that he had several conditions, several demands of the world, including no NATO in Ukraine, which was always number one. You know, if you watch the interview with him, there's Oliver Stone did these interviews with Putin. Very interesting, you know, if you just try to not be emotional and be rational, you know, and watch them. He's actually been pretty consistent. What he said, he at one point Stone asks him, you know, about NATO. You know, the only time Putin gets emotional is on this subject of NATO. He starts saying that this is going to fence him in, it's going to block it, you know, it's a threat to his country, no NATO in Ukraine, da 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 da. And then, you know, Stone says to him something like, well, what do you envision for the future? And he says, well, we're not as powerful a country. You know, we don't have as many weapons as America, but we're not going to let ourselves be, I don't remember the exact words, but we're not going to let ourselves be penned in and be put at a strategic disadvantage. And if we have to, we're going to have to be primitive, or we're going to have to resort to something primitive. We don't want to. But you know, if we're put in a strategic box, or you know, something like that, that he viewed this NATO thing in Ukraine as the last kind of piece on the chessboard, and then he's surrounded. This is from his perspective. He's saying, boxed in like that and at a strategic advantage. So we don't want to do anything primitive, but if we have to, we will, you know. So basically what I'm saying is not that he's justified. I don't believe violence is the answer unless it's true self-defense, which he would probably, you know, say that it is, but I don't necessarily agree with that. But I think what my point is, he's been very consistent in what he's objected to, what he's asked for, and recently what he said he would do if his demands were not taken seriously. And as far as I'm aware, you know, the West is kind of lying to our people when they say that there's been no effort. You know, Biden said in one of his speeches, you know, that Putin rejected every diplomatic effort, you know, that we made. But as far as I'm aware, we didn't make any effort to meet even one of his demands. So, you know, I mean, some of his demands some of these missiles, we got out of the anti-ballistic missile treaty that Khrushchev and Kennedy signed in 1972. George Bush, you know, scrapped that, you know, that changed things as far as these placement of missiles, you know, so there's a lot that's led up to this, you know.
There's a lot, but I think just going back to what you're saying, Putin is a madman.
I don't know, Rob. I think he's
a madman. What person would bomb a hospital, a maternity ward, trying to elicit the reaction of someone else? You have to be a madman to do that. Okay.
I'm not saying
a madman like just completely bonkers, but his crave for power, he's an evil man. You would not do that.
Yeah, Rob. I mean, you're talking about a war, okay? Really? I'm not gonna say he didn't do that on purpose. I don't know. Maybe he did, but you know,
I think he's a madman.
I was watching a film the other night about World War II. It was all about the RAF and how they had to make this terrible decision during World War II because, you know,
before you bring that up, I just want to go back to what you're saying. You said that he's not a madman. Okay.
I'm not convinced he's a madman.
Right. Okay. But
I'm not saying he's not, but
understood. But let me say this. Okay. Because something that you're about to say, or I thought you're about to say, as far as him bombing the hospital, the maternity ward.
I'm not sure that was an intended.
Wait, but hold it. But let me say this, because I think that a lot of people are completely oblivious to to what happens during a war.
Right.
During a war, women and children are killed, unfortunately, like men. I mean, people are killed, but you know, they use that. Women and children are gonna die. It's an emotional. They're playing on our emotions.
Sure. Because and it's terrible.
Why would we want men to die? Why would we want men to die?
It's all
we shouldn't want anyone to die.
Of course not. And I'm not in any way trying to minimize or downplay how horrible it is.
Right.
I'm just speculating, and I, you know, it's just my speculation that.
Oh no, I agree with you, but I think the point that you were saying.
War starts happening, and they're dropping.
That women and children are killed.
I mean, even if you are, let's say there are times, look, Israel has to fight in self-defense. They have to fight. You know, they're under fire from Hamas. They're surrounded by avowed enemies bent on their destruction. They bomb, you know, and I happen to know as a matter of fact, you know, because I've known Israeli soldiers and I've interviewed Israeli commanders and military. They are under strict orders to do no such thing as target a civilian ever. And yet Palestinian civilians die because it's a war that they keep waging.
Right. It is a war and people are killed.
I don't know that I'm not vouching for Putin. I think he's a dictator.
He's a madman.
I wouldn't want to live under his rule. He's jailed journalists. He's had them killed. So Zelensky's jailed journalists too, by the way.
Yes, he has.
This is a part of the world, you know, that we are very naive about. This is a tough, you know, a pretty brutal part of the world.
But Heather, are we naive about it, or we just don't want to accept that the brutality of it? We know what's going to happen. We knew if Putin said he's going in again, men, women, and children were going to die. We cannot pretend as if though we didn't know that was going to happen. So the images that we're seeing.
So much. Why didn't we say, you know what, Putin? We don't want men, women, and children to be killed. So yeah. Maybe we'll talk about just one of your demands. You know what? Maybe Ukraine doesn't have to be in NATO. Would that have been
right? That's what we should have said. So the images that they're showing us, I'm like, come on, you knew that was going to happen. I mean, Andrew, don't you agree? That was going to happen. It was part of him. That's part of war. People get killed, and we've got to accept it and stop allowing them to play with our emotions, thinking that, oh, we need to go in and we need to fight also. We don't. We need to do what we're doing.
We can try to help.
There are, but I don't want our boys on the ground.
We're like at once sending weapons, and then we're crying about the fact that people are being killed. I mean, to me, I don't mean to oversimplify, but, you know, it's kind of like we're not looking honestly at our own contribution to this mess.
Like buying oil from him, billions of dollars, helping him to fund it. I mean, Andrew, what do you say? We've got to close out, but come on. This is just reality that people are going to, women and children are going to die. We can't allow our emotions to guide us.
Yeah, absolutely. And from Putin's point of view is that if he's going to go to war with Ukraine, he's going to go to win. So at a certain point, you've got to do some drastic things. And that sounds like that's becoming more and more apparent to try and put Ukraine over the line into submission. We'll see how things play out. But we are out of time. Thank you all for joining us tonight on After Dark with Rob and Andrew. Thank you to our guest journalist, Heather Robinson from the New York Post, for joining us once again. Check us out and all the other shows over at America Out Loud, who's about to celebrate its 6th anniversary. You can also find America Out Loud on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcast, or wherever you download your podcast. We'll see you guys next time. And remember, stand for something or you will fall for nothing.